Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, brought to you by City Current and powered by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. This show shares personal stories and insight from those who are giving back and making a difference so we can learn and do the same. We cover life lessons, business advice, passion, and purpose. Now here's our host, Jeremy Park.
Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. We're in for a treat with this one. We have someone who's literally been known to save lives. He's a last resort for parents who've lost a child who's gone missing. He's been someone who's served our country, our city, protecting our freedoms. When you talk about being a public servant and being someone who steps in and save lives, he is the executive director for COMEC, which stands for Commission on Missing and Exploited Children. His name is Lynn Edwards. How are you doing, Lynn?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Absolutely. So you are a change maker. We'll talk a lot about, you know, your role with COMEC, but also, too, you're someone out there advocating and talking a lot about important issues like bullying. So we'll cover that as well. But for starters, tell us where you grew up, Lynn.
Well, I grew up in New England, and I was a child of a single mom. We had four boys in the family, and unfortunately, mom passed when she was 36 years old, and I remember being impacted by the officers who came to the house that day, and I looked at their shiny uniforms and their brass buttons, and I just thought to myself, I was only 12 years old, I thought, you know, someday I'm going to be a policeman. And from that time forward, that's all I ever wanted to do.
Wow. So 12 years old when you lost your mother, what is that something that your brothers kind of had to come together and raise each other, or did you have another family member that stepped in, or how did that play out?
Well, we pretty much were raising each other before mom passed, and then had been in several foster homes and things like that. So I kind of grew up in the system, and we were able to overcome some of those obstacles, and we're all here in the Mid-South.
Wow. So all four brothers here in the Mid-South.
That's correct.
Nice. How did that happen? That's got to be a great story in and of itself.
Yeah, it's all in sticking together. So my brother is a lieutenant on the Memphis Fire Department. So we're all involved in public service.
Wow. So talk about, you know, obviously losing your mother at a young age, but what's maybe some either lesson or, you know, some memory that stands out that's a fond memory or a lesson learned from your mother?
Well, the one thing I remember from my mother was the fact that she was not a reactive discipliner, meaning that she always kneeled down and looked at you face to face and explained to you what you did wrong, and that she'd talked to you about it in the past, and you were disciplined, and then after the discipline, she'd kneel back down and say those words that every child hates to hear, and that is, this, that hurt me more than it hurt you. But that wasn't true.
So talk about on your end. I mean, obviously, as you said, you know, at a very young age, you wanted to go in and be a public servant to serve. And so at what point were you able to kind of make that transition? Was it at age 18? Or talk about kind of that transition.
Well, the more research I did about becoming a police officer, at that time we were professionalizing the department, and they required 48 hours of college in order to become a policeman, and not having any funds and not knowing how I was ever going to pay for college, I received, believe it or not, a $2,000 scholarship from the Whitehaven Kiwanis Club that opened the door for me to go to college. And so once I completed my 48, I thought, I'm going to go ahead and finish and get my degree. And then, in fact, went back to school a couple years back and got my master's degree.
So, nice.
You know, working on education, you know, it's my mantra, as everybody that knows me, is that, you know, your faith, your family, and your education is a pretty simple recipe for success in life. So,
absolutely. Talk about on your end the first few years, because I know that when you kind of dream of something, you know, my brother, I think, you know, dreaming of being in the military, and you're gung-ho and you go through boot camp and then you get in and you work your way through, and sometimes that changes, because all of a sudden it's like that enthusiasm, it becomes your job. So talk about the transition of, you know, growing up and wanting to be a police officer and then going through, obviously, getting your education and then those first steps to becoming a police officer.
Well, the reality is the key word that you mentioned was enthusiasm. There's very few people in this world that truly get up early so they could go to work every day because they enjoy it that much. And fortunately, I was able to work in an environment that I readily understood, and that was the inner city environment. So going out into the inner city and being a changer, being a person that people could rely on, that they could depend on, that they didn't have to fear, you know, that was right down my alley.
Was that here in Memphis? Or
it was.
There you go. So share a little bit about COMAC, because I want to start there, and then we'll kind of talk about a lot of the things that I think are really important in terms of what you've created as your legacy. But describe COMAC.
Well, COMAC is a 501c3 charity that was established in 1984 after a series of highly publicized child disappearances, one of those of which was Adam Walsh and the son of John Walsh of America's Most Wanted. And it started as a collaborative effort between the Shelby County Sheriff's Department, the Memphis Police Department, and the Juvenile Court of Memphis and Shelby County to better address those issues regarding children that were missing for whatever reason, whether they were runaways, throwaways, parental abductions, or stranger abductions.
And so how did you get involved? Because as you mentioned, you loved working to be that person that people could trust. Talk about getting involved with COMAC.
Well, I was sent to the commission as a technical advisor by the Memphis Police Department, and the executive director left to pursue other opportunities, and the board of directors asked if I would be interested in taking over the head spot, and I did, and that was in 1990.
Nice. I kind of call you the child whisperer, but I think one of the things that makes you very unique is your ability to talk with especially young adults and youth and really get to the bottom of what's going on. And I know that you've got many stories that, you know, you'll ask the parents to step outside and then you step in and you start talking to the child and you realize there's a lot of things that the parents don't know that you're going to have to be brutally honest with. And so I'm just thinking of one even you mentioned the other day, but talk about your role as kind of the child whisperer and how important that is to have that open line of communication with children.
Well, I think that communication is key, and I've been blessed by the fact that kids will sit down in front of me and talk to me about things they won't talk to other people about. They won't talk to their therapists, their parents, their grandparents. They'll talk to me because they know that I'm going to listen more than I'm going to talk, and they also notice that I don't have a watch. And there's a purpose behind that, and that is because most of these children have been in therapy before, and they know that in 45 minutes or 50 minutes that they're going to be done, and they can sit there and literally just hold out and wait till the session is over. With me, I'll keep them in my chair all day long if I have to, and more times than not, after a while, they'll just start open up with little bits and pieces. And the funny thing is, it's like a thousand-piece jigsaw puzzle. Once you start putting little pieces into the puzzle, meaning what they're feeling, what they've seen, what they've heard, once you start putting those pieces into the puzzle, all of a sudden it opens up a clear picture of what direction I need to go to kind of give them some guidance toward the light at the end of the tunnel.
So you're dealing with very, you know, severe traumatic cases. Where someone's been abducted, it's a runaway, you're, like I said, the last resort for parents, even for you know, law enforcement to be able to work through you to put the word out, to find, to start picking up all these puzzle pieces to put the puzzle together. Share, you know, the story that comes to mind on my end was this story you told recently, but where it was a young girl and, you know, she was supposed to be somewhere, but she ended up somewhere else and was actually being kind of initiated into a gang. It was a really traumatic story, but give us maybe one story that just kind of paints the picture of the stuff that you deal with on a daily basis.
Well, let's share that story. That'd be a good one to start with. This was a officer's child, a Memphis police officer's child that he had come to my office and asked if I would talk to his teenage daughter regarding the dangers of running away from home. And he was sitting there in his uniform talking to me, and he said, Well, she ran away and she spent, the last 7 days with Tiffany. And I asked who Tiffany was, and he said, oh, just some girl that she met online, but I want you to just talk to her about the dangers. Well, I sent Dad out of the office and sat down with the little girl and started talking to her. And she's 15 years old, and she sat there, and I said, you've just talked to your dad and your mom, and you've just told them this Grimm's fairy tale, and that's just what it is, a fairy tale. Now you've got the chance to talk to me and tell me the truth. And all of a sudden, she just started bawling, just started crying, and she said, well, I'd met this boy at school, and this boy's older brother, I went over to his house, and they put me in a gang, and in a gang situation. They brought me to a local hotel, and they took their turns with me, and then they said that I needed to bring some money in for them, and I went out on to the street to sell my body so that I could give these older guys.
And this girl's 15
years old.
The daughter of a police officer.
Right. And Dad's sitting out in the hallway, and he thinks that the little girl's run away and been gone with her little friend, when the reality of it is that there was a much deeper and a much sadder story. So my dilemma was, what do I tell Dad?
Right.
And when I brought him back in to see a grown man cry like he cried about his daughter, it'd break anybody's heart. It was the saddest thing that you'll ever see. And he said, why wouldn't she trust me? Why wouldn't she tell me? Why wouldn't she talk to me about this? And so we got the issue resolved, and now she's back at home and she's doing well with her parents, but she's a much smarter child. You see, a lot of these kids just don't have the impulse control. They don't have the street survival awareness to understand the dangers that are out there. And so that's where I spend most of my time is trying to relate to these kids and tell them that, you know, sometimes the big bad wolf doesn't come dressed like the big bad wolf.
Right.
Sometimes it's somebody in a suit and tie. It may be a classmate. It could be a professional. It could be anyone.
And I think nowadays it's so scary because people can hide, especially through online, and be anything that they want to be, but that's not obviously who they are. So you have kind of that facade. And then, you know, the world in general has become so dangerous. With the violence and the guns and everything. And as a child growing up and as a parent, to keep your child, you want them innocent and safe. And yet at this point, you've got to be so overly protective. But to your point, it goes beyond the protection. You've got to have open lines of communication because these kids are going through traumatic instances. And if they don't trust you, they can't tell you what's really going on. Share a few, because you've in the past, you've been on the Spark, our TV show, and you've come on the radio show, and you've shared some really amazing tips on just, as a parent, how do you interact with your child? How do you take control of situations? How do you, you know, like if they're keeping their bedroom door closed, it's your house, it's your bedroom, you need to go in and be able to have open lines of communication to see what's going on, looking for drugs, looking for things like that. So give maybe a few tips when you're talking to parents about how do you try to safeguard against this?
Well, my first tip is going to be on the greatest threat that's on our children today. And that is these iPhones, these cell phones, the smartphones. These kids are getting these phones when they're 8, 9, 10 years old. And parents, if I can get anything across to you, understand that WWW means the World Wide Web. It does not mean Memphis, Tennessee. It does not mean your neighborhood or your community. The threats that are out there online are horrendous, and the skill in manipulation that these adults who would do harm to children is tremendous. A lot of adults, in fact, are being scammed by online communication, and so I think that's the most important thing. I had a mom the other day that I was talking to. It was rather funny because I asked her about her daughter's cell phone use. She goes, well, I really don't keep up with that because I respect my daughter's privacy. I said, really? I said, how old is your daughter? She said, she's 9.
Wow.
And I said, you respect your daughter's privacy. I said, do you know your daughter's password to her phone? Well, why would I get that? That's her phone. I said, well, let me ask you this. I said, when was the last time you called your daughter and she answered the phone when you called her? Well, usually she texts me. after I try to call her. She'll text me. And I find that more and more kids are doing that to their parents. And what it is, it's giving them time to create their story of where they are, who they're with, and what they're doing. So I tell parents that these phones are not a given right to have, and that you must take command and control. I was recently at a high school where the mother says, at our house, we have a house rule regarding phones. And basically, it is that all phones go on the charger at 9 o'clock at night, and they're there till the next day. Do you know how many kids whose grades are falling to the very low numbers because of internet phone use, texting at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning?
Because those things are addictive. I mean, I think that's where, especially for a young mind, I mean, I see, you know, with our kids, our older son, he's 14, and he'll sit there and read on his phone. I mean, now instead of doing the books, the physical books, he reads on his phone. But you can't really tell if he's reading or playing games, or, you know, it's like, so we have to, you know, go in and say, it's time for bed, it's time for this. There's, you know, to your point, there's certain times when you can do it, there's certain times when you can't. You have to do your homework first, you know, all these sort of things, but it's so hard to police. And so, to your point, if you don't set those boundaries and hold to them, it's easy to have the kids manipulate out of it.
But on that as well, I was at a restaurant, a nice restaurant recently, and I love to just watch people. And I saw this mom and dad and two children sitting at a nice restaurant, and they all had their phones out. They did not speak a word to each other. They ordered their food. They ate their food using the phone the entire time.
That's such a shame.
So the quality of family time is deteriorating because of these kind of things. The Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention says that the average face-to-face time between a parent and a child is 20 minutes a week. Now, that's 20 minutes a week.
Wow.
Now, that means face-to-face time. That doesn't mean make your bed, clean your room,
right,
take out the trash. That means face-to-face. And I get the question all the time, how do you create quality time with your children? You can't. You can't create quality time. It either happens or it doesn't. But you need to make sure that the opportunity for it to exist is present for the children.
Gotcha. So, okay, so obviously the cell phone usage, that's one important issue. What's another, maybe one or two tips that you like to give for parents to open those lines of communications but ultimately safeguard their children?
Well, I'm a believer in touch, and I think that there's a lot of kids that don't get that pat on the back or pat on the head, and I think that's so important in motivating children, because if they're not finding affection and attention at home, they're going to find it somewhere else, and it may not be positive and constructive. It may be destructive. So working with these kids, some of them are just so darn sad that they just feel like there's nobody there. And when you finally do reach them, or you coach the parents into better parenting techniques, it's wonderful. And the great thing about my job is it's free. Everything we do is free. Our counseling, our drug testing program, where we test children whose parents suspect that they're using drugs, confidential drug testing program. You know, we're now into the bullying. I hate that word, bullying.
If I say, I like that you call it intimidating.
Exactly, because that's exactly what it is. It's intimidation. And it's not only kids that are doing that. It happens in the workplace every day.
Right. Well, so let's switch over and talk about bullying, because I think this is something that is so pervasive, but it's so important, and it's much more than a hot topic and a kind of a hot button. I mean, this is something that we truly have to dive into. And to your point, this isn't just kids, you know, bullying each other at school. You're seeing this intimidation all throughout the workplace. And even today, when you look at social media, you see bullying. You see bullying at every level, in the sense that if I don't like what's happening to me, either with an interaction with a company or another person, I'm going to intimidate them online. I'm going to, you know, and all of a sudden it plays out everywhere. And so when kids see that parents do it, and especially online at the World Wide Web, next thing you know, they feel like, oh, well, this is a socially acceptable behavior. And then you end up with, well, I intimidate you, and then you retaliate, and next thing you know, we're pulling out guns. And so we got violence. So talk about intimidation. Talk about it from that standpoint of just, you know, like you said, this is pervasive. This is a huge issue.
It is. And you've got to ask yourself, where does this learning take place? When you look at the number of domestic violence cases the police department handles every year and the sheriff's department handles, what is domestic violence but intimidation? And so the kids see it. They see how dad controls mom or mom controls dad or the children, and they learn. And they become, as we said earlier in the interview, the children are desensitized to violence. And so where my mother may have said, you know, go out and settle it yourself or punch them back or hit them back, those days are gone. Now children use guns and they use knives. And usually it gets...
As I say, bad things happen.
Exactly.
So share with us when it comes to intimidation, when it comes to bullying. Obviously, you've got different probably tips for different groups. I mean, I know you speak a lot to youth groups, school groups, churches, organizations on that front, but then also to parents and adults. So give us maybe a few of your favorite tips or bits of advice when it comes to how do we work together? How do we heal this?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought to myself, you know, if your child is doing bad in math class, what do? We get him a tutor because we want him to develop skills to better understand his math lesson. Well, we've developed a curriculum. It's called Getting Better at Getting Along. And you know what? This curriculum could be used in the workplace, in the family structure, with children at schools. Think about that. When you read and see and hear all of the violence that's in our world today, getting better at getting along. I just saw that recently in the drive-through lane at McDonald's where they were cutting each other off and giving that international hand gesture to each other. It's
right.
Like, it's crazy. And getting better at getting along is truly where we need to move as a culture, as a society. We've got to do that because we're seeing too many people die needlessly.
Well, so conflict resolution obviously is a big part of that. But I know that you've told a story in the past about, you know, there's a young girl that's getting bullied at school. And she's basically like, you know, look, if I stand up for myself, I'm going to get pushed back. And then you end up in a shoving match. If I turn and walk away, then they're just going to get me on social media. I'm going to get made fun of. If I turn to a teacher, I don't really know what that recourse is going to be. So, you know, kids especially, you know, are dealing with very difficult situations because they feel like they're in a no-win situation when it comes to being intimidated at school. And, you know, unfortunately, it plays out, obviously, in a lot of different ways that you've seen in the 10 o'clock news. But talk about it from your perspective on what are some of the recommendations, especially for you know, like Kaysen's come back and kids have said mean things on a school bus or whatever else. And you try to sit down with them, you say, look, it's, you know, that's kids being kids. They don't know any better. Don't take it to heart. You know, in other words, what do you tell them? What do you, how do you process that?
The two main thoughts that I try to present to children, and we've done many, many, many scores of presentations recently in the community centers and in the vacation Bible schools and things like that. What I tell the children is two things. One is the best way to avoid a fight is not to be there. And the second thing I tell them is that if somebody has to be mad, don't let it be you. Think about that in itself. If somebody has to be mad, don't let it be you. Children are masters at pushing each other's buttons about your tennis shoes.
They're masters at putting everybody's buttons.
Yeah.
Especially parents.
Yeah,
exactly.
And, you know, your shoes, your hair, your looks, your clothes, you know, your...
It's all fair game to them.
Your athletic ability. Yeah. We can go on and on and on. But, again, if somebody has to be bad, don't let it be them.
Right.
Move on. Don't take everything so personal and right on the chin. But it is concerning to me that is one of the things that I have asked the children themselves, because that's where I learn, is from talking to the kids. When a kid says, if I try to turn the other cheek, I look weak. If I walk away, I look weak. If I go tell the teacher or administrator, I'm a snitch and they're going to beat me up for that. So really, what do I do? And that's a real dilemma right there.
Yeah.
So we're still searching for that answer.
Well, but I mean, I personally think, and this is something that I've tried to instill in our children and to others that, you know, we mentor and work with, and even coaching through youth sports, is standing up for each other. So in other words, I vividly remember, I mean, this is a little bit of a different twist, but I vividly remember my brother was getting picked on at school, and I basically stood up and said, you know, if you're picking on him, you're picking on me, and if you make this decision, I'm walking out right now. And, you know, I was the number one player on the team at the time, and so it caught everybody's attention. Well, if you don't have somebody that's your advocate, your ambassador, your hero, whatever you want to call them, standing up for you, it makes it a lot tougher. But I know in these instances, if someone, you know, instead of being a bystander, becomes an upstander and stands up for that person that's being bullied or intimidated and says, hey, this isn't right, this isn't what we should be doing, that's where there's got to be real change. But I mean, that's the hardest part, is, you know, creating this sense of ownership that, hey, we're all in this together. A kid with disabilities needs to be protected as much as this kid over here who might be a little bit different, who might be a little bit over here, you know, less athletic, who might be over here wearing, you know, like all of those things. We need to take ownership and say, we're all human. We're in this together. We all need advocates, people who are going to fight for us, especially when those situations occur. And I think it's got to come from the kids themselves taking ownership.
Right. Well, it's very interesting that you brought that up, because when you look at the national curriculums on intervention for bullying, that is the number one issue that they bring up. They said when classmates, when peers stand up and intervene in bullying situations, it's more effective than any other thing that can be done. You know, someone in the class who's watching another child being bullied to literally interject themselves into the situation and say things like, why are you picking on Tommy?
Right.
You know, Tommy doesn't bother anybody. And calling down these bullies by their peers is very, very effective. But one thing that I find really interesting is that the vast majority of bullies have been bullied themselves. And so when they get older, stronger, more aggressive, they become bullies.
Interesting. One of the things that was an interesting thing that you brought up before was the fact that as a parent, if your child is being bullied, your natural instinct as a parent is to reach out to the other parent and say, what is your kid doing? But you say, don't necessarily do that, right?
No, because you're going to get bullied. You're going to get bullied by the other parent. I always say that this should be handled at the school level, especially if it's happening at school. Go to the teacher, go to the guidance counselor, go to the vice principal, go as far as you need to go. But something needs to be done, because what we're finding is that a lot of litigation, especially in regard to bully sides, where these young people are killing themselves because they cannot get away from the bullying, they're contacting lawyers and they're suing, and it's costing a lot of these municipalities a lot of money.
Well, so obviously there's it's a hot topic, it's an important topic, and so it's one of those where for the schools to address it is, you know, obviously extremely, extremely important. But I think for us as parents, teachers, advocates, it's, you know, how do we set the example and be good role models, knowing that the kids are always watching, but also too, you know, how do we empower them to take better control of the situations, to have more confidence in themselves to step up, but also to peacefully step aside when the time, you know, needs, when the time is right to step aside. So I think there's a lot of layers to this. So let's switch gears and talk about something else that I think is, you know, extremely important. It's an epidemic that's going on right now, is drug addiction. It's, you know, not just alcohol, but it's prescription pills, it's opioids, it's heroin. Talk about the drug situation from your perspective.
Well, in my perspective, is having been in law enforcement for many, many years, it used to be that the access point for drugs was the street corner dealer. And now, in today's world, it's the family medicine cabinet, where people are keeping Darvocets, Percocets, oxycodone, anything, pain relievers. Even though the injury has long since passed, they hold on to the pills. And the kids are very street savvy. They understand what these drugs are, and oftentimes they use them or sell them. So the first thing that I advise parents to do is clean out that medicine cabinet, and don't make that a source for your children's drug experimentation. And of course, our drug testing program, you know, at juvenile court, it's great, because you know, every parent wants to know the truth. And I'll run a 7-panel drug test on your child and find out what the results are, totally confidential, for free. And you can't beat that deal. And it gives you a good place to start, because we've found that identifying drug use with children at an early age definitely increases the likelihood of successful treatment.
Well, I know that you say, you know, clean out the medicine cabinet, because in many cases the kids might know that the pills you've been stashing away for 5 to 8 years thinking your injury might come back, they know more about it than you do.
Exactly.
So I want you to tell the story of Sam and your son. I think that's something that's it's an amazing story. But when you talk about how we can work with our kids, foster relationships, foster this, you know, kind of world of better understanding, but also too just getting along. I think that, you know, to me, I look at being a role model, you know, with everything that we do, because the kids are always watching, but also too, it's how we can incentivize them and reward them and show them what's important. And I think for our kid, for instance, our kids, you know, when they come home from school, we ask them, you know, do you have homework? But we also ask them, you know, did you help anybody today? Did you open the door for the teacher? Did you do something good and kind? And that's what we'll reward on the behavior side. So it's not, did you have fun at school today? You know, we ask them what they learned. Give me something, you know, on that line. But we always are intentional about, well, what good did you do today? What kind gesture? What was something you did to help someone else? And I think by kind of framing it that way, as parents, it's one simple way to show them what's important. But tell the story of Sam and your son.
Well, I've got two brief stories. We were down at L.E. Brown Park, down at St. Paul in Orleans. It was a hot summer day. I had to pick up my child from school, and he was with me. We went by the swimming pool, and he saw all the children in the water, and he saw the other kids standing outside the fence with their fingers in the fence. And my son asked the question. He says, Dad, he says, how come all those kids aren't in the pool? I said, well, maybe they don't have the 75 cents that it cost. And he goes, well, why don't they ask their mom and dad? I said, well, maybe they don't have a mom and dad. And so I thought to myself, well, what can we do? What message can I give him? I got out. I went up to the thing, up to the cashier. I paid for all the children around the fence to go into the pool. And so all the kids jumped into the pool, and they were so excited. The next day, I'm shaving, getting ready to go to work. My son comes in. He hands me his piggy bank. He says, Dad, are you going by the pool today? I said, I am. He says, well, if any kid needs to go swimming, let him go swimming on me. And he gave me his piggy
bank. Wow.
And that's and the other one was a young boy named Sam that was sitting out by the playground, and he's sitting there with an Indian position with his legs all crossed, and he's just crying. And I said, son, why is he crying? He says, Dad, he says, he's terrible in football, and we play football at break, and nobody will choose him for a team, and so you know, that's why he's upset, because everybody got to play but him. I said, well, I'm going to give you a life's lesson. I said, you choose him first tomorrow, and what's going to happen is you're going to have a lifelong friend. Dad, I can't do that. If I do that, we'll lose. I said, no, you're going to win. You may lose the game, but you're going to win in life. Next day, he chooses this young boy, and the kid gets out on the field. He's so excited, and they threw him the ball. He caught the ball, ran for the touchdown, and that afternoon when I picked my son up, this boy had his arm around my son and was just jumping up and down and laughing, and he was included for the first time. And he said, Dad, at first I didn't think that was really a good idea. He says, but I like the way that made me feel. And that's what I'm talking about getting better and getting along. That's why it's so important that we show our children through our own actions, our own behavior, our own words, how to treat other people.
Well, and you know, you always talk about it. We all want to be included. We all want to have purpose. And it's simple, but it's you know, it's hard sometimes, but it's like it really is simple. It's just including everyone, making them feel like they're a part of the team, showing that they have purpose and value. And so I think, you know, to me, like you said, these are things that we can embody, that we can be role models for, that we can live out ourselves. And, you know, when we're tempted to blow off the frustration or get mad, realize that people are always watching, especially the little people, our sons and daughters. And so setting a good example for them. And even, you know, to your point about all four, you know, at the table at dinner with their cell phones, being cognizant of that and saying, okay, at dinner time, all phones are up. Put them in the middle of the table, whatever it takes, but all phones are up. And we've had to do that with our family too. And I'll, you know, self, admittedly, like, you know, I'll get on to Meredith and Meredith will get on to me saying, hey, we know the rule. I'm just like, I've got to get that email off. And it's like, no, this is a rule for our dinner table. Even if we're out to dinner, whatever, put them up and let's actually have a real conversation. Because to your point, we got to get past that 20 minutes of FaceTime a week. I mean, that's sad.
Absolutely. And the fact that our children are being inundated with negativity, the news that they're hearing, everybody wants to talk about what's bad. And, you know, I try to turn that around and talk about things that are good. And because there's not a fair balance of good news versus bad news. And if your home is just inundated in that negativity, it's surely going to go with your child to school and to his playground and everywhere else. And as they become adults, the violence that comes on the street, it's got to start somewhere. So that's why I say to a lot of the educators that I talk to that the level of violence in children in grades 1 through 6 doubles that of grades 6 through 12. So where do we need to be addressing our prevention efforts towards the small children?
Yeah. I read it or saw it somewhere, but I'll never forget it. It's if you want to set the tone for a nice night or nice day with your spouse and your family, walk in with enthusiasm and love. In other words, go right up to them and either kiss them on the cheek or kiss them and, you know, tell them how important they are, but don't walk in with the frustration of the day and be, you know, I always say Negatron, but it's like, if you want to set the tone, come in with a positive attitude and, you know, that will lift the whole family and you'll be surprised what a little bit of enthusiasm will do for your day.
Well, a good point to that is I had a very successful Memphis businessman come to my office with his child. He's had his child in therapy for 2 years, but he just heard about our office. He brought his kid in there. And so dad says, well, you know, he said, we started with a 25-inch TV. We went to a 30. Now we went to a 36 and then to a 47. And now we got a 50-inch TV. He goes, those things don't fall out of the sky. I have to work hard to give these to my child. When I interviewed his son, and I asked his son, what would you like to have happen? He said, I'd like for my dad to take me to play golf. Well, you may have that 50-inch TV screen, but you've lost your son at its expense. So, you know, take the time. Go
yes.
to the pool.
Well, I mean, it goes back to spend your money on experiences with your family versus just buying things.
Great point.
You know, experiences are where the bonds are formed. And so having those traditions, and those ultimately become family traditions that you can, you know, remember and carry forward with your families for many years to come. So talk about from your stance, you know, traditions. I mean, I think that's a fun kind of segue in. We're going to do a lightning round here in a little bit, but just talk about a fun family tradition on your end, either with your brothers or just something that you remember. But what's a tradition in the Edwards household?
Well, I'm a cook. I love to cook. I love to grocery shop. I love to clean house. I'm just a domestic kind of guy. And all of the family comes to my house because I'm the one who's going to do the turkey and the dressing and all of the fixings.
Nice.
And coming up as in extreme poverty like I did, meal at my house during the holidays is something to see. Because if it's not on the table, you don't need it.
So, okay, let's go ahead and switch over. And we call it a kind of a lightning round. It's a fun chance. I just rapid fire a bunch of questions. But these are just fun opportunities to get to know you better. So what's a recent book you've read?
Recent book. I'm always reading. Probably the 2016 Memphis Kids book that is published every year by the Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth. All of the statistics, all of the information. I love information.
Gotcha.
You know, and the other one was the Purple House about conflict resolution. That was a good book. I enjoy that.
So, what's a recent movie you've watched?
Every time one comes out, I like movies that are. Don't take a lot of thought.
Well, in your line of work, I mean, you're you're so into the emotional side that I can think that, yeah, for a movie, you probably just want to, like, relax. And
yeah, Spider-Man is kind of easy to get into, and you don't have to think about, you know, the consequences. It's the fantasy versus the reality.
So where's a favorite vacation spot?
Rent a home every year down in Panama City and bring the whole family in and just have a full 7 days, all at the table, all on the beach, all at the attractions and events, and anything where you bring the kids in and the grandkids in. That's a lot of fun.
So Pier Park, spend some time at Pier Park, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness. That'll hurt your wallet.
They have go-karts and the Amazing Maze. Have you done the Amazing Maze down there yet?
No.
Where you take the kids through the maze?
No.
They have to time themselves to get out. It's hilarious. You can watch from up above. And so it's, yeah, I know that area very well. Okay, so what's something that you like to do to relax?
I'll go to my boat. I have a boat at Pickwick, and just going there on the weekends, and again, bringing the family and raising my son with the boat. He's now got a boat for his two kids, and so we all just tie up together and just enjoy each other's time and company out on the water. To me, that's the best family time in the world because, you know, we don't do cell phones at the boat. And all we do, and even though it's got a TV and everything on it, we don't use that. It's all about in the floats. Even our dog has got a float of her own, and she's got her little visor and her little sunglasses. And other boats will drive by, and they'll see my dog out in her little raft, and they'll say, That's amazing. So we take care of what's important out on the water.
That's awesome. So what do you, if someone's coming to town to the Mid-South here, what's something that you like to take them to do? Or what are a few things that you like to take them to do?
Well, I think the strength of Memphis is the river, and I love to take people downtown to the river or in Graceland. I enjoy Graceland tremendously. And I'll tell you something else, the Civil Rights Museum, I'm going to tell you that I've been there 5 times, and I enjoy going in there because that's part of my work with kids. I tell them, I said, you know, I work with missing and exploited children, and I talk about history and the exploitation of cultures, and that without faith, family, and education, you can be exploited just like what the museum is showing.
Yeah, that's a powerful museum. Anytime we have guest speakers come in, we try to take them to St. Jude and National Civil Rights Museum, Graceland, but Civil Rights Museum always just completely, it blows them away, but it also blows me away. And I've been there like you know, many, many times, and it's they do an amazing job there. So, what are some favorite restaurants, or what do you enjoy eating? If you're not cooking in the kitchen, what are you enjoying?
Well, my favorite, of course, is the Rendezvous. It's hard to beat the Rendezvous, and I enjoy that tremendously. And in any place that has fried chicken. But I've recently lost 25 pounds by not eating fried chicken, so it's kind of one of my...
So now it's more of a like a delicacy type thing.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was talking to an addict the other day that was in my office, and he was talking about the drugs and how they make him feel. And when he doesn't have the drugs, how he gets the shakes and the shivers, I said, I have that happen to me every time I go by churches. I said, you know, I'm as addicted to fried chicken as you are to opiates. And I said, if KFC, churches, Popeyes, I said, that's when I really get the shakes is when I go by Popeyes. And I'm always looking to see what's on sale in their window. Now, that's sick.
So I feel like you're one of those where, like, every day we could ask you, like, what's a conversation you've had recently? And, like, you're going to have just amazing story after story just from what you deal with. I do want to, you know, as we kind of wrap up, I know, we're getting close on time, but, you know, you're a retired captain with the Memphis Police Department. Share, you know, one either fond memory or just, you know, kind of that side of your story, because obviously we've talked a lot about COMEC, a lot of tips and advice for parents, for kids. But I think, you know, you having the legacy of wearing the blue and protecting our city, what does it mean to you to serve? But also give me one kind of just fun, good memory or fun thing that stands out is a happy moment serving our city?
Well, one of my happiest moments was when I won the Kiwanis Club District Law Enforcement Officer of the Year. And when I went down to accept the reward, I stood there in front of 500 people, and I brought up the fact that it would have never happened had it not been for the Whitehaven Kiwanis Club, that I would have never have achieved the accolades and the success in my career. But one of the happiest things that I used to do when I was a field training officer, I loved to get these young people right out of the police academy and teach them what's not in the books. Teach them about being kind. Teach them how to communicate that. Sometimes it's not your words that are communicating. Sometimes it's your actions. It's your looking at people, your touching of other people. You know, I think that's something that's, you know, I've said getting better at getting along. I think we're seeing a movement now in law enforcement that was never there before. And that is the community aspect, where you're an ambassador of the community and you're taking care of the community. I know when I worked south of Corona, they used to say, "He's our policeman." And I took pride in the fact that I was their policeman. And I think we need to have that pride again.
So what would you tell you know, people listening that perhaps want to, like you, you know, as a child, you see this could be me, you know, when I get older, this could be a real career, this could be a profession. Mm-hmm. What would you tell, because obviously right now there's a shortage and we're on a recruitment campaign for our city to try to, you know, to graduate more police officers through the program. But talk about what kind of, you know, on your end, what would you tell someone that's young that says, "I want to be a police officer"? What would you tell them?
The first thing I tell them is get your education, because you know, there's a lot of different kinds of education. There's book learning and there's social learning, and learning how to get along with other people, learning how to communicate with other people. I think that is so important. And I think that young people today, they need to realize that they're under more observation today than ever before in history, with the advent of phones and these cameras and things. But the other side of that is that it oftentimes gives some people an opportunity to throw stones at the guardian at the gate. And so what happens when you stone the guardians at the gate? They leave the gate. So I think that we need to refocus our efforts and support the law enforcement, and let's bring that pride back again, that, you know, this police department works for us. Our teachers work for us. And that professionalism is so important and so necessary.
So last question, well, I have two, but the last hard question and the easy one is, you know, your website. So the last hard question is, what do you hope, I mean, obviously you're still writing your legacy, but what do you hope, you know, many, many years from now, what do you hope that people say about Lynn Edwards?
Well, I think that if you come through this world and you don't leave a footprint, I think it's a life that's been wasted. There's many ways that you can leave a footprint in this world. Helping children is a good one. Helping the elderly is a good one. You know, coming up with a cure for cancer would be a good one. But leaving a footprint behind, to go through life with anger and hatred, and to go through life never contributing anything to anybody, that's what I talk to these young people about. Leave a footprint behind. And it may be a best friend. It could be a next door neighbor. But leave a footprint behind. And that's the legacy that I want to leave, is that I've left a footprint. And it's funny, because I do have children that have come back to me 10, 15 years later and said, "I made it. You said I could make it. You showed me how to make it. And I made it, and I just wanted to come back and introduce you to my husband, show you my children, show me my college degree," when this child was heading down a terrible, destructive path. So we can't cure all of them, but we can cure them one at a time.
Love it. Absolutely. So tell listeners where they can learn more about COMAC. How can they, you know, get in touch? How can they follow the conversation?
Well, our website is comec.org. They can email me directly at comec@comec.org. We make that very, very simple. We work at the Juvenile Court of Memphis and Shelby County. If we can assist you with, you know, any issue that you're having with your child, we'd be happy to do that. You know, there's a lot of, we're very fortunate in Memphis that we have a lot of referral agencies that are highly professional and effective in working with kids. And if you just need a referral, then we certainly can do that. Or if, you know, you just need me to talk to your child. Again, everything that we do is free. We're a charity, and we do depend on the community itself for donations and financial help. We just had our charity golf tournament this last Saturday, and we had almost 100 golfers come out and support our efforts.
Well, you are a change maker. You are a lifesaver. What you're doing is absolutely, so, so important for not only the Mid-South, but all around the nation. And I can't thank you enough for all you've done, you know, with your years of service and all you continue to do to this day. So thanks for all you do, Lynn Edwards, and for being a changemaker. We appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Changemakers Podcast, produced by City Current and powered by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. To learn more about our guests and to share your stories of others leading by example, visit us online at citycurrent.com. Connect with us online using @CityCurrent or follow the conversation using the hashtag Changemakers. Now, think big, start small, and act now. Be a changemaker.